Hello and welcome to the Negative Positives Podcast, episode 355. I'm your host, Mike Gutterman, coming to you from the Gutterman Cave here in Louisville, Kentucky. And spring fever starting to catch here. It's getting a little milder and I like it a lot. This is a solo show, listener interaction show. So how about we just dive into some listener interaction? Let's get to some emails. I got an email from Simon Arnold, and it's called Emerging Artist in a Pathless Market. NFTs, are they really an answer? Okay, and this is an email. This is like a story. So a little story going on here. Tonight, the moon must have business elsewhere. It's dark on the ridge we are on top of. She's sitting on a bench, and behind her, a city twinkles on the floor of the desert canyon. I've brought with me a headlamp, a timer, my 35mm film camera, two lenses, one for portrait shots, one a bit wider, and a shutter release cable. I've got four frames left on the row of black and white I loaded into the camera maybe 3 weeks prior. I'm slow to shoot. Film is expensive. She has sheer white fabric cloaked over her face and tucked into her jacket. This will serve two purposes. One, it will be easier to sit still for a 20-minute exposure with the freedom to blink and swallow. Two, it might look interesting. We get her seated, frame the shot, get the focus, double-check the settings, set the timer. Okay, you ready? Are you comfortable? Yes, she says. Sure you don't need to scratch your nose? We spend the next 20 minutes softly chatting and sometimes pausing to listen to the little bunnies and birds hop around the bushes near us. We talk about art and galleries and how the art market leads the charge in a bear market and is the last to join the bull market. Galleries, like restaurants, have been crushed by COVID. Artists are undercutting their own galleries to maintain some kind of income. And what the hell am I going to do with my photography? NFTs come up. Non-fungible tokens. I hope I'm saying that right. Fungible? I guess that's right. And smart contracts. Something that has caught my attention in the past few weeks. I'm trying to explain how art is minted as a token on the blockchain in a quantity predetermined by the minter. It doesn't make much sense coming out of my mouth. Because it's so new, it doesn't make much sense at all. Yet it is still an opportunity for an emerging artist like me to meld two antagonistic mediums, analog photography and audio, into one. Throw it onto a platform like Rarible and see what happens. It doesn't seem that people are buying NFTs for art's sake. It sounds more like they are buying a narrative and or speculation to me, she says through her veil. You're probably right about that. She's probably 100% right about that. Who knows? NFTs are art now, but they could become textbooks, music, movies, podcasts. We pause for a moment, listening to a little critter scurry by. The timer goes off. The shutter on the camera closes. She takes the veil off, tosses it on the table, and as she runs past on her way down the path, I have to pee so bad. I take a photo of the table with the veil on it while she's away. And there's the photo right here in this email of the veil on the picnic table here. So anyhow, this is from Simon Arnold, and his website is www.dindin.com. That's two N's, D-I-N-N-D-I-N-N.com, dindin.com. And let's see, he is a writer and analog photographer from the Southeast, now living in SoCal with his soulmate, previously mentioned in the story, and her cat, a killing machine. I like it. He's also on Instagram at dindin.photo. That is dindin.photo on Instagram. Thank you, Simon, for this very eloquently written email. And I got to admit, NFTs, I'm completely confused by it. I actually went to an Associated Press article to try to learn more about them. And after reading that, I'm still confused by it. But apparently it's a way to basically buy a digital work and actually be the owner of it and have ownership of a digital work, whether it be, I heard like somebody bought like a digital, I don't know, I guess footage of like LeBron James dunking or something like that. So, and like you could be the owner of this or something. It's, It's completely bizarre and like alien to me at this point. I've been hearing this little catchphrase, NFTs, here recently, and I got to say, after researching it, I'm still confused. Simon, your email somewhat helps me a little bit, but I'm still completely confused by this. It just seems so alien to my analogness, I guess. But thank you so much, sir, for this very interesting email. And Simon has offered to come on the show at some point and share what information he's gathered on NFTs. So maybe we need to do that. Maybe he can try to educate me on this phenomenon, and whether it's going to be a trend or something that will go bust. Who knows? But very cool. Okay, next up, we have another email from Paul Greif. I believe it's Greif. I actually looked up the pronunciation, how to pronounce it, and in German, it's Greif. It's G-R-E-I-F. So it's not Greif, it's Greif, apparently. I hope I get that right, Paul. Paul sends an email, because Paul was the big wiener in the... what challenge was this? The dad joke competition. we've got quite a few prizes we need to get out. But anyway, Paul says, "Hi, Mike. First off, wishing Andre well and hope that he feels better soon. Andre is doing quite well. I just got off the phone with him before I recorded this podcast here. I just listened to number 354. Awesome episode. I really enjoyed the discussion of flat film and Lomo Purple with Ken Bertram, Jess Jones, and Jess Hobbs. I've never shot Lomo Purple, but it sounds like something that I should try. I also a big fan of Jess Hobbs' YouTube channel. Very inspiring and well-done videos. Keep up the great work, Jess." What's this? I'm a big wiener. That never happens to me. A shout out to my fellow big wieners, Kevin and Malcolm. Your dad jokes were awesome. Thank you so much to Ken Bertram for sponsoring this contest, and thank you to the Committee of Five for judging the competition. Ken voiced a drunk Mr. Ektachrome way better than I did in my head. Perfect delivery, Ken. I'm also so appreciative of this very generous FPP gift certificate award from Ken. The FPP is one of my favorite places to buy film. I love what they have done and continue to do for the community, and I'm happy to support them whenever I can. This contest was super fun, and I'm glad I got the chance to take part in it. Rock on, Mike. Best regards, Paul Greif, Big Wiener. Nice. Well, let's see. Do I have... I was trying to look up Paul on social media. I think he might be on Instagram as Beam Splitter. There's the profile is a guy holding a camera. I'm pretty sure that's probably you, Paul. Beam Splitter on Instagram, but you have no posts. So no photos up yet. So hey, if that's your account, hey, everybody check it out. And let's get a little pressure on Paul to get some photos up on that account, right? So there you go, Paul. There's a little, put you in a hot seat there a little bit. So but congrats on being the big winner of the dad joke competition, and it was a very deserving joke. I mean, it was a film theme joke that you actually made up, so job well done there, sir. And thanks for the email. Oh, he also says, if you ever come up to Wisconsin, let me know. I know where they keep all the Miller Lite. Imagine there's no shortage of Miller Lite in Wisconsin, so I will definitely let you know about that. So very cool. Okay, let's see, what else do we have here? Speaking of the dad joke competition, we still have a new competition going on through the month of March here. We're about halfway through March. We have a couple of submissions. It is the analog kissy selfie contest, where you take a film camera and do a selfie of you kissing something that you love, your partner, camera, your cat, whatever it may be, and you submit those photos to the thread we have in the announcement section on the Negative Positives Facebook group. If you look in the announcements, you'll see the listing for this contest, and that's where you submit your photos to. And I have two big wieners in this contest that will win some FPP Film Love 200 black and white film that was so graciously donated by Mr. Michael Rosso from the FPP. So I'll be happy to get a couple rows out to the two big wieners in the analog kissy selfie contest. And I even put a photo up, just to show you what I'm looking for of me in the 90s in the Pontiac Fiero doing an analog kissy selfie with my girlfriend, who is now my wife. So all good things, all sorts of love happens in a Pontiac Fiero. I'm just saying. All right. And then what else here do we have? So you have that until the end of March. You got a couple more weeks to get those in. We got a couple of entries so far, but I'd like to see a whole lot more. Come on, guys. It's easy to do. Just hold a camera out, take an analog selfie of something, you kissing something you love. So there you go. All right. What did I get in the mail? I got some cool things in the mail. So let me get to this. This one comes from John Michael Mendeza, and he sent me like this way, I think way before Christmas, and it finally arrived. Like, I think it was like last week or something like that. And so it took quite a while to get from Germany here to Kentucky. So, my ancestry homeland of Germany to my current home of Kentucky, took a bit, but it finally did arrive, and man, was it worth the wait. But let's read this letter from John Michael Mendeza first before we talk about what was in this box. He says, "Dear Mike, hope you're doing well and having a good holiday season. I'm a regular listener of your podcast and really enjoy you and your co-host's interaction and enthusiastic discussions of all things film photography related. Whenever I have some time, I like to put on my headphones and listen to you guys banter. Keep up the good work. I wanted to send you a little goodie I made to thank you for the hours of enjoyment. I hope it will serve you well. Some backstory. I started out in film photography a few years ago. When I got back into it, I got myself a Rolleiflex. Rolly? Then a few 35mm cameras, including a working man's Pentax Spotmatic. Nice. And then this spring, I took the plunge and got a Hasselblad. The newest addition to my collection is the legendary Pentax 6x7. And you are partly to blame, as you always go on about how beautiful it is." Nice. Well, I'm glad I could lead you down that path. When I got mine, it needed some work. It took me a while to get everything working and replace the leather. Then I started trying to use it and realized just how much it needed a better grip. The left-hand grip looks great, but I can't imagine it being very useful for taking pictures. So as I like to make things difficult for myself, I started designing my own. I'm a goldsmith here in Germany, and we have been using 3D technology to make jewelry pieces for a few years. For the last few months, we had a 3D printer in our shop. Sadly, it didn't work out for our jewelry needs, but I did manage to print out a few grips. The grip I'm sending you is the third generation of my design. If I remember correctly, you have a butter grip on your 6x7, but I think this one is better. Strong statement. And I also have included some of our local nougat for your wife, just so you won't get into too much trouble for getting surprise packages. All the best. And remember to stay positive and shoot some cool 6x7 photos. John Michael. Well, thank you so much, John Michael Mendeza. First of all, for that letter would have been enough with all the nice comments. But what did John send me? First of all, yes, he sent me like 20 pieces of this German chocolate, like nougat candy concoctions. And oh my goodness, they were delicious. I had to admit, I ate a few myself, but then I did give the rest to Mrs. Gutterman. And she actually sent me a text at work the night that I gave her the ones that I didn't eat. I gave them to her, and she sends me a text at work saying, "Okay, that's it. We need to move to Germany just for the candy." So there you go. So we quite enjoyed those. But not only did we get German candy treats, there is indeed a Pentax 6.7 right-hand grip that was 3D printed by John Michael Mendeza in this box. And it's very nice. It's I do have the butter grip from Ethan Moses on my of Camera Dactyl on my Pentax 6.7 currently, and I've enjoyed that. But this one's pretty nice. It's smaller, and it has like a nice, like I don't know, like a knurled sort of printing on the grip. So it has a nice little grip to it. But the coolest thing about this grip, folks, at the top of the grip, it says "Stay Positive." And at the bottom of the grip, it says "Mike Gutterman." So it's a personalized 6.7 right hand grip. How cool is that? Like, I love Ethan Moses, and I love his Camera Dactyl butter grip for my Pentax 6.7. And I've enjoyed that grip on the 6.7. I think it's made it a much easier to use camera. But this grip's got to go on the 6.7, right? I mean, it says "Stay Positive" and it has my name on it. Like, there's no way this is going to have to boot the butter grip off the 6.7. It just has to. And so I could not believe it. Like, something like that. you know, just something personal like that, that somebody would take the time to send me and make and design and put that, my name on it and stuff like that. Like, I couldn't believe, I was laughing like a little schoolgirl when I opened up the box and saw that. I was very, very pleased. It's so cool. Like, thank you so much, John Michael Mendieza. It's, super, super awesome of you. I did a face cast on the Negative Positives Facebook group showing this and a couple weeks ago, so you can find that if you want to see what it looks like. And I'm sure I'll, at some point when I get this mounted on the 6.7, I'll probably take some photos of it and put it where you can see it on the Facebook group as well, probably. So, and I forgot to write down John Michael's, let's see if I can find his socials real quick before I... move on here. Yes. Okay. John Michael Mendieza is on Instagram at JM Mendieza. Oh, actually, shoot. I have his business card right here. I could have found that a whole lot easier. Yeah. He's on Instagram at JM Mendieza. JMMENDIZZA. And he also has a website that is JMM-photos.com. JMM-photos.com. Thank you so much, John Michael, for just blew me away. The chocolates would have been enough. The letter would have been enough. But a personalized Pentax 6.7 grip, are you kidding me? Ridiculously awesome. So thank you, sir. All right. And then I did get a zine in the mail. This one comes from Regalado Santos, and it's called Rust Buckets. And this is a very cool zine, all color, of old rusty pickup trucks, old rusty cars. A lot of detail shots, a lot of just rust and decay of these old classic vehicles. And what I like about it is it uses a bunch of different color stocks in that scene, like Porsche 400, Fuji Color Pro 400H, the hottest expensive film going on right now, apparently, with the discontinuation. Kodak Ektar 100. Let's see, there's more 400H, Porsche 400, Superia Extra 400, Provia 100F, Superia 200. Here's some Ektachrome E100, some Cenestil 800T, more Provia. Let's see, more Portra. Yeah, just all sorts of different color film stocks in this. So you kind of can really see going through the zine, like how the different stocks kind of render these old rusty vehicles. And I really loved it there. I said I did a face cast on this where I show the whole zine this last weekend. So that's on the Negative Positives group if you want to check that out and you see the zine. Get a chance. There's also a link to get you a copy of this if you'd like, which I definitely recommend. And it is just very cool. When I was first into film photography, I said this on the Facecast that I went in these woods in this park near my house, and way back in the woods, like just out of nowhere, there was this old rusty car, and I took shots of it, and I was just kind of new to film photography, so I wasn't right on top of my game, I guess. So I decided like a couple years later, I was like, I wonder if that, as I'd gotten better at photography, right? And so I was like, I wonder if that old car is still back there in the woods. So I went back in those woods, and like, it took me forever to find where it was at because, you know, it's been quite a few years since I've been back in there. And I finally sort of found it. The the car had pretty much decayed and decomposed to nothing. It was just like literally all that was left was the frame, and so there was like not anything great to take photos of there. And just really kind of bummed me out because it took me forever to find the spot. Well, the reason it took me so long to find it because there wasn't much left of it, but I was like, ah man, that, you know. But I would love to take shots like these in this Rust Buckets zine from Regalado Santos, but I don't know if I can find this many cool rusty vehicles in my area. But anyway, thank you, Regalado, for this awesome zine right up the alley of some stuff I would love to do. You can find him on Instagram at pretty_nifty, on Instagram, pretty_nifty, and also regalados photography.com. That is R-E-G-A-L-A-D-O-S photography.com. Regalado Santos, thank you so much, sir, for just a really, really awesome zine. And it's nice too. I love when the you know, not only just seeing the different film stocks and how they render these things, but it's a real concise subject. Like, the whole zine is this one subject of different rusty vehicles, and I think it's nice to have like a laser focus sometimes with these zines because you know it ties it all in, right? It's a complete story in a way. So there you go. Thank you, sir. Okay, what else do we have here? Looks like it's about time to take us a little break. And we are going to have, we're going to take a week off from Roxana's female film photographer series. Instead, Roxana and Andre got on the horn and talked to Maxim Grew from Intrepid Camera Company, because they have a new product coming out. And since this one is a little bit more time sensitive, I'm going to go ahead and put that in this solo show. And then we'll get back, the next solo show, we'll get back to Roxana's series with women photographers, film photographers in the community. But for now, for this one, we'll have, you won't have to miss Roxana. She's in this interview, so you'll still get to hear her lovely voice. But you're going to have Roxana and Andre Dominguez interviewing Maxim from Intrepid Camera Company right after this break. So we'll be right back, folks.
Welcome, everybody, to the Negative Positives Podcast. This is Andre Dominguez here, coming at you with a very special solo show interview, which is not so solo this time, because it's not just myself talking to a very, very special guest. We also have, returning once again in group format, the lovely Miss Roxana Angles. How are you doing today, Roxana?
Oh, hey, everyone. I am doing so well. It's so exciting to be here doing this with you. And, you know, I'm ready to get the party started.
For sure. And speaking of party and what it is that we're actually doing today, as you guys may have heard on one of Mike's previous solo shows, we got an email from none other than Mr. Maxim Grew of Intrepid Camera Company out in the UK, wanting to talk to us a little bit about their fantastic new enlarger that is going to be hitting Kickstarter on March 19th. So without further ado, let's go ahead and welcome Max to the Negative Positives Podcast. How are you, Max?
Hello, I'm good, thank you. Thanks for having me. Just fresh out of the dark room and still got the smell of stop bath on my hands. So it's nice to be here. It's a good time.
Well, you know, that's something that Roxana and I are very accustomed to. Girl. I'm sure that it's been a lot less time since your last print, Roxana, than it has been for me.
As I'm actually sitting in my dark room recording this, I am getting ready to mix up some chemistry in the next few days. So yes, I am all ready for tonight's interview.
Well, that's perfect. But yeah, so, you know, for those who are not in the know, who haven't been paying attention to the film photography news, they may be scratching their heads thinking, well, what is Intrepid, you know, the maker of fantastic large format cameras, doing talking about darkroom printing? What is this enlarger I hear of? So, Max, why don't you give us a little bit of an intro with regards to Intrepid's history of enlargers, because this isn't your first enlarger product that's been out on the market, and a little bit about this this new offering that's going to be hitting Kickstarter soon.
Sure, I'd love to. So yeah, like you said, it's not our first enlarger. We made an enlarger attachment for our 4x5 cameras a couple of years ago, which is essentially a light box that clips onto the back of 4x5 cameras and then converts them into an enlarger. At the time, it seemed like a bit of a mad idea, but there is it has happened before. Graflex made a similar product, but it was because it's not on sort of a fixed traditional enlarger mount. It seemed like maybe a bit of a crazy idea, but we did that a couple of years ago and really proved the concept of sort of compact enlargers being really usable. And ever since that, everyone in the team sort of really caught the bug for darkroom printing. And we've been exploring the technology behind it and how some of it's maybe a little bit, I think outdated is the wrong word, it still works really well, but there's just less companies involved with the sort of evolving darkroom products. So we sort of took up that mantle a little bit, and the product we've got coming out on March 19th is our latest generation of enlarger, which is a 35 medium format enlarger all the way up to 6x9. And it's the technology of this one sort of leaps and bounds ahead of our first one. We can do, it's got sort of integrated contrast filters. It can do color printing. It's got a light source that can pop off the back, so it can backlight your negatives for scanning with a digital camera. Well, it does it all, really. And it's been in the work for a couple of years, and it's been incredibly fun to prototype. And yeah, we're really excited to be launching it next week.
Yeah, that's, you know, extremely, extremely interesting for, I think, a lot of people. Large format already kind of being a sort of intimidating avenue of film photography for a lot of people. You guys have done an amazing job of making that accessible. I know that there's a lot of people that I've been in conversation with since getting into large format that have pointed to Intrepid, whether they purchased an Intrepid camera or not, of sort of demystifying it, instilling confidence in them. And I'm sure that the same is going to happen with this enlarger. I've been just consuming every bit of information that I can about it, watching all of the video reviews and to make sure that you know, I was personally ready to ask you some questions. But I do want to rewind a little bit back to the previous version. Well, not necessarily the previous version, but the previous enlarger product that you guys did put out, because I think that was something that really didn't receive as much attention as I think that it should have. So as you mentioned before, it was a light source that clipped into the back of, didn't necessarily have to be an Intrepid camera, but given how light they are and have a Graflock back, makes perfect sense. Clipped into the back of the 4x5 camera using the Graflock cams, and essentially, you know, because that's all that an enlarger is, right? Is a light source with a bellows, exactly, yeah, lens on there. What were things that you guys learned about the development of that product and receiving feedback from people that inspired some of the changes of this new product? Because now it's not reliant on having a 4x5 camera. It's its own integrated, you know, unit together, at the expense of not, for this current version, going up to 4x5 in terms of negatives. But what were some of the things that you learned? We actually just recently had a review of the Intrepid 4x5 enlarger kit on one of our solo shows.
Yes, I listened to that review, and it was really it's always so nice to hear about people using, like, we don't normally get to see the products we make out in the real world. So it's so nice to hear sort of feedback from people. So I did listen to that review, and it was really nice to hear. For your question, what we learned, I think the main thing we learned was that the concept of having an enlarger that you mount and sort of make parallel yourself, sort of an enlarger that isn't part of a fixed body, something you can mount on a tripod or copy stand, really isn't as intimidating as it first sounds. When we first launched that enlarger attachment, a lot of people were saying, well, this is going to be impossible to line up. How on earth are you going to get sharp prints with this? There's no way you're going to be able to get everything parallel. And it actually turned out that it was really easy to get everything parallel. It actually becomes quite a minor part of your setup when you take into consideration the time you're spending sort of warming your chemicals, mixing your chemicals, getting your safe light set up. So all the prep involved with getting set up to do darkroom printing, you're looking at a good, you know, 20, 30 minutes of setup time normally. The actual sort of getting the Intrepid enlarger, the 4x5 set up, was such a minuscule part of that. So that was really great to learn that the main concept behind enlargers that pack away are compact and don't necessarily come with this massive stand. Knowing that was viable is what really sort of kicked off this next project. The other feedback we had was that when you're first getting into darkroom printing, learning how to do all the different contrast filters and all these various other accessories you need to get can sort of make the process a bit intimidating. And we had some experience with the process seeming intimidating from our 4x5 cameras. So we really wanted to pare down on what you actually need to make darkroom prints. So that's why the new enlarger has all the contrast filters, all the color filtration, even a safe light all built into the controller itself. So there's just much less accessories you need to go on eBay and find. And the whole process just seems a bit simpler when you don't have to do all these different avenues of research.
Wow, that is so amazing. I can't believe it has all of those features. Like, I've been reading about it and I am truly blown away.
Yeah,
I mean, yeah, it's cool.
I think it's a great point that you made, Max, because when it comes to, you know, large format or darkroom printing, they're actually very similar in that there's a lot of bits of kit that traditionally you need. It's not just, oh, I'm just going to buy an Intrepid camera. Well, you need a lens. You know could probably use a dark cloth, a tripod with maybe something like a geared head or like a three-way, you know, pan tilt head. There's a lot of things that go down the proverbial shopping list that this product eliminates in one fell swoop, and in terms of cost, in terms of complexity. Like, I remember having to pick up a set of the Ilford, you know, contrast filters, and I like the under the lens one, just because there you've got the little handles to put things in for split grade printing. But yeah, the ability to have that little control box, which does all of your timing, which has a safe light integrated into it, the, you know, contrast control for black and white and for color as well. I think that's something that I'm really looking forward to this product getting more people into RA4 printing, because that's a whole new aspect of the workflow that I think a lot of people, myself included, don't have any experience with and think is much more, you know, complicated than it probably is. And Eric from what's his YouTube channel called, Doing Film Things, he's done, I think, an amazing job of demystifying RA4 printing for his audience and for me personally. So I'm really looking forward to seeing more people get into RA4 printing with that. Going back a little bit to the development process, obviously the kind of, other than the construction and the mechanics of it, not having to rely on the camera and being standalone, you guys use a variety of different materials, from, you know, metal rack and pinion system to 3D printed parts and metal, obviously a cloth bellows. Everything's held in by magnets. It's just really, really fantastic product design. When it comes to the things that have had the most improvement and iteration over the previous and larger product, being the light source and the control box, given that that's something, when we look at the history of Intrepid as a company, that's outside, that what was outside of your core competencies, you know, what was that process like of having to research LED manufacturers and figure out, you know, how can we combine something that's simultaneously small, not too expensive, has all the correct spectrums? Because that's a whole different ball of wax than figuring out how to manufacture an object that is a camera made out of wood.
Yeah, that's such a good question. Your knowledge and understanding of what's been hard to do is very impressive. So I'm glad you asked that question. Yeah, the LED tech and the control box is something that is completely out of what Intrepid's sort of knowledge base was previous to the start of this project, which started around 2 years ago. Up until this point, we were a bunch of people who are good at carpentry. And now we're a bunch of people who are good at electronics and carpentry. So the learning curve was steep, but also we kind of did it in the same way we do a lot of our product development, which is make something, test it in the field, make a change, test it in the field, rather than sort of a lot of iterations on computer-based design. We own all the tools to make all of our products, so we can really quickly make a physical prototype. So with that being a quicker process, because we were already skilled at it, it actually gave us a lot of time and flexibility to really invest sort of people hours into getting the knowledge for the LED tech and the controller. When we first started with the original enlarger, the LEDs that our current enlarger uses didn't actually exist. The technology to make those LEDs didn't actually exist. So it's sort of quite cutting edge, which is why I'm not surprised it hasn't been integrated into an enlarger before. But yeah, we had to learn how to design circuit boards, how to do all the basics of electronics, capacitors, resistors, how it all works. I had to learn C++ coding language to control everything. But because we've always got this philosophy of just doing everything you can in-house and then outsourcing once you have the internal knowledge rather than trying to outsource without actually really understanding what you're outsourcing, we've been able to prototype something and get something so close to what we think is an excellent finished product that it's actually really paid off, because I think we're going to be able to do a lot of it in-house, which has always worked really well for us in the past, being able to sort of reiterate, make changes based on user feedback and work with the users without having this person in the middle that slows everything down. So it's been an incredibly rewarding design process. Spent an awful lot of time in the dark room, but I think when you're designing an enlarger, it'd be a bit weird if you weren't. Got much better at printing as well, which is also a nice side effect, because I was pretty rubbish at the beginning.
Have you noticed your skills and your confidence in the dark room improve throughout all of this?
Yeah, so like literally today I was, so today's dark room project was we got a big De Vere 504 or 405, I can't remember. De Vere actually are based in Brighton as well, just up the road from us. So we had one of their enlargers and we were comparing direct settings to our enlarger. So same contrast settings, same lens, same exposure times, everything we could make the same basically, and lining up all the prints and seeing if we could spot any differences. So today was actually, firstly, the prints I thought actually just looked quite good on their own. I was really happy with that. This was just a nice personal achievement. But also I couldn't spot a single difference between the same settings on the same enlarger. I've actually seen bigger differences between two traditional enlargers than our enlarger and this one that costs, you know, the power supply on this enlarger costs more than our enlarger is going to cost. So it was a good day today. I think we've really reached a point where the concept of this product is proved. We've got people out there. We've got 12 units out in the world being thoroughly tested by people who know their stuff. And yeah, it's a good point to be at when you're launching a Kickstarter, to feel quite confident in the product.
No, absolutely. And, you know, I'm sure that there are things about this product that are not going to satisfy the, Mike jokingly accuses me of it a lot, but I don't mean to resort to ageism, but there is a particular flavor of older gentlemen with, you know, 40 plus years of experience printing who only trusts the tried and true long-standing brands, that all of what you're saying is not going to convince them to abandon their mm-hmm. De Veres and their Besslers and things like that. But thankfully, and you know, I think appropriately, this product is not going after those people. Your target market isn't to try to change the minds of those, you know, codgy old forum warriors that are never going to abandon the gear that they've been using for decades. But it's actually really encouraging to see that you aren't just trying to build something that's, you know, yeah, it kind of works and there are compromises. No, you guys are comparing it directly to some of the best enlargers in the world and noticing very few, if any, differences in the actual output, which makes sense, because the same way that we will compare, you know, let's say camera bodies to one another, at the end of the day, they are just light type boxes. All the other, you know, things about them ergonomically and in terms of the experience of using them, the buttons and knobs and how things are oriented, that's just, you know, extra stuff that makes the process easier. I know from my personal experience, having some pretty big heavy enlargers in my small North Hollywood apartment, that, you know, I've got no qualms at all about the quality that this enlarger will produce. I'm already thinking ahead to, man, this is going to be so much easier to use than some of the big, heavy, cumbersome gear that I have. And on that note, I do want to go ahead and have us pause for a little bit of a break. potentially just out of paranoia for the let's go ahead and break, and then we will be right back with you guys in just a few seconds. We are back with our interview with Maxim Gru of Intrepid Camera Company. We are coming up pretty quickly on the launch of the Kickstarter. I believe it's March 19th. Is that correct, Max?
Yeah, March 19th, 6 p.m. GMT. So, yeah, sort of a range of times in the U.S., but all reasonable times.
For sure, for sure. and then that'll be running for, 30 days as usual.
Exactly, yeah, it's going to be 30 days. And we've got a few sort of few big names on YouTube doing reviews and tests during the sort of time it's running. And
I had Christine Bartolucci of Analog Talk and Negative Supply, mm-hmm. and her colleague Alan Escalante, also of Negative Supply, come on over to my apartment last weekend to borrow a grain focuser and an easel, which were the two things that Chris needed in order to start working on the video. So, no, it's super exciting to see more of these kind of first looks with the pre-production models that you guys have been sending out, going out there. With regards to Kickstarter overall, you guys are kind of a shining star, I would say, of the film photography Kickstarter world, which has, various degrees of reliability in terms of the actual outcome of results, if there is an outcome at all. For you guys, what has that been like, having Kickstarter as a model for product launch? What does it allow you guys to do? And do you see that being a model for future product development moving forward?
So Kickstarter, without it, Intrepid Camera wouldn't exist. The first Kickstarter we launched way back in 2014 for the original concept of a sort of a lightweight, affordable 4x5. It was just me straight out of university, no workshop space, very little knowledge of how to build a 4x5 camera, actually, ironically. It was quite impressive that people trusted me with that. But without Kickstarter, we wouldn't have got the ball rolling. So with the money from that, we were able to rent our first workshop, hire James, who was my sort of first part-time employee, who is now the head of production. So without Kickstarter, we wouldn't have started. Not to say we haven't had our hiccups on Kickstarter. People who backed us on the 8x10s Kickstarter will know that the film holder part of that Kickstarter didn't work out, but we refunded everyone for like that small accessory that was supposed to come with the main product. Kickstarter can be hit and miss, but part of when we do a Kickstarter, we make sure we have the money in the bank sort of now or with the last two, that if it does go completely wrong, people get their money back. I think it's the concept of Kickstarter to raise funds for a concept that you haven't fully worked out and that might not deliver, I don't think it's quite the right way to use the tool. It's a great way of advertising a new project and getting the word out there very quickly. It's a great way of making a community so that everyone feels like they've got something invested and behind this thing. It's not a great way to sell a half-baked idea and give it a go. It can be a mixed blessing, but this is our fourth Kickstarter. We've always delivered, albeit sometimes a bit late. But for us, it's been a great tool.
Well, I don't know about you, Andre, but I am so excited about this next Kickstarter. I was reading the specs on this enlarger, and, I'm one of the ladies and gentlemen that, grew up with enlargers, and I have one. And I love the the portability of it is just, it looks magnificent. And all of the things that it can do, like, do you, Max, will you tell our audience all of the things that this enlarger does? Because it's like, I was looking it up and I'm totally blown away.
Of course, I'd be happy to. So it's got three sort of modes of operation. So the enlarger body itself is something that you will clip on your tripod or copy stand. So you don't need a big stand. The whole kit can fit in a shoebox. So it's really easy to store. So the first mode, once you've clipped it on your tripod or copy stand and point it down, is black and white mode. So that allows you to print from your black and white or color negatives, but you'll make a black and white print. And you've got the contrast filters from 00 all the way up to 5 built into the LEDs. So that basically affects the balance of blue and green light, which affects the contrast of multi-grade paper. It looks a little different if you're used to using multi-grade filters, because those filters have red light in them as well, a red element to them as well. But obviously the paper isn't sensitive to red. So from what the paper sees, it's getting the same light as it would using a traditional multi-grade filter. The next mode is color mode, where you have full control over cyan, magenta, and yellow. And with that, you can print from your color negatives and make color prints. We've got the thing calibrated so that 50 on each of the color settings is like a pretty good starting point for most negative film. And then you sort of play with the magenta and yellow dials until you get something pretty accurate. That's been really fun to develop. I did a color printing course right at the beginning of product development and then spent as much time as I could printing color and learning all about the process. First thing I realized was it's not that difficult at all. The hardest part is maintaining the temperature of the chemistry. Everything else is actually pretty easy. So that's been really fun. And then the third mode is the light source on the back of the enlarger is just sitting on these two smooth rails, and it just really easily pops off. The bellows are held on by magnets, and then you can use that as a backlight with the negative carriers that you would use just with a normal enlarger. You use the backlight and the negative carriers, and then you can digitally scan in your negatives by using a digital camera and pointing that down at the backlight. The backlight's got a machined flat surface on the back of it, so it holds everything really flat and parallel if you can get your camera parallel to it. And then the light source is also pre-calibrated to the different types of negative film. So you want a slightly different color temperature of light for black and white, positive or negative film, and you can dial that in on the settings. So that basically means when you get to Lightroom or Photoshop or whatever you're using, you have to spend a lot less time messing around with the white balance and color balance and saturation, things like that. You can basically click invert and you get something pretty close to what was what the negative was intended to look like. What else we got? Oh, and the controller itself has a button on it that turns a safe light on and off, which is built into the back of the controller. So you don't need to get a separate external safe light. It's all there on the controller. And obviously that's been calibrated so that it doesn't fog your darkroom paper or anything like that. That's it.
It's a stunning array of features and functionality that eliminates so many other like corollary purchases that one would have to make if they're just starting to get into this. I mean, really, like, to you and all of your team, like, a huge congratulations on this, because, like, when I think about things like this and the new Riveni Labs spot meter, it's
getting... I just backed that yesterday, just in time.
It's getting, you know, things that currently exist and actually applying for the first time in a long time with regards to products in this industry, a significant amount of real innovation that is intended to make things, you know, more affordable, more accessible, and in many cases, like, perform better than their counterparts. Just really, really well done. With regards to the control box itself, is there the possibility for, like, upgrading the firmware? I know that that's something that with the Riveni Labs, like, they just put out an update, you know, where there's just like a little micro USB port where you can upgrade the firmware. Naturally, my brain is going forward to like is there the possibility to include some kind of like f-stop timing programming into it? Because when I look at the prices of like dedicated f-stop timers on the secondhand market, that's something where I'm like, surely someone you know at any of these companies that I've mentioned can figure this out and make that more accessible and affordable to people.
Absolutely. Yeah. So in a very similar way to how Raveni Labs has approached it, there will be a little micro USB or USB-C port on the back, and you will be able to upgrade firmware. I think it's something that I can definitely see being a future firmware upgrade. Was, as I was mentioned with the scanning light, it's something where at the minute we've got black and white, color positive or negative, as the choices of the backlight for your film when you're scanning it. I can see in the future having a much more detailed list, and you can choose the perfect light for Portra 400, the perfect light for Portra 160, or whatever your film of choice. And that, you know, having the ability to just push some firmware on our website and just say, I'll just plug it in and upload it to the enlarger, is definitely something that will be integrated into the design. It's something I do now as I'm prototyping. Make a change in the code and I upload it to the timer and I check whether it works. So it's definitely something that we'll continue doing.
And you know, to whatever degree it makes the enlarger, you know, purely darkroom printing, eschewing all scanning purists role in their graves, it's functionality that we all wish that we had. I mean, I'm starting to get into digital camera scanning. We sell a few of the negative supply products and other products on the Cinecil online store. So I'm learning, you know, at the same time as the customers that I'm helping in customer service. And it's really, really exciting to see that, like, not only can this thing do black and white, not only can this thing do color, it also helps to scan. And with the more accessibility now of copy stands from companies like Negative Supply or Skier, it's something that I think is really going to help, because that is something that, even though you mentioned it's not as difficult as it seems, I think copy stands are going to be more and more a part of film photographers' you know, workflows as they start doing more scanning or printing with something like this new enlarger, because, you know, even a relatively small footprint copy stand like the Negative Supply basic one is something that can stow away pretty easily even in a small apartment, but definitely does require a lot less fiddling than a tripod with three legs and a central column. So it's exciting to see, you know, in another way, different products within from these new companies within this space all working together to make the whole process easier for film photographers.
Yeah, definitely. We still have quite regular chats with Saxon and AJ from Negative Supply, and we actually use their copy stands. They were very kind enough to send some over. So we've been using their copy stands for prototyping, and they do work perfectly. They're a great, one of their copy stands is an absolutely excellent addition to any sort of film photographer's kit, yeah.
And with regards to, you know, future products, I can't help but, you know, but look at the eventual evolution of this kind of product category. Naturally, the whole technology you mentioned about the LEDs in the light source was not even around at the time of the original 4x5 enlarger kit. Do you envision, you know, a Mark II or larger version being available down the line? Because not only do you guys just make 4x5 cameras, which this current version that's about to launch on Kickstarter unfortunately doesn't cover, but you guys are up to 8x10 now. So what prospects does this enlarger concept have for some of the larger negative sizes that you at Intrepid are so passionate about?
Yeah, it will definitely make its way into the 4x5 enlarger kit. And I, that's sort of a given, really. whether we go down the continuing with the attachment for the back of 4x5 cameras, or we go down the route of sort of an individual tripod mounted device like the one we're launching for 4x5 and just sort of have an XL version of the product we're launching soon, is yet to be decided, or maybe we'll do both. With going bigger than 4x5, you start to enter into a problem that's kind of really plagued us with the development of any larger, bigger than 4x5, is that you can't, the thickness of the enlarger attachment onto the back essentially can't fit on the camera, because there's no sort of, with 4x5, you've got Graflock clips, as you were talking about earlier, which is sort of a universal way to mount attachments. But with 5x7 and 8x10, you don't really have that kind of thing. Everything has to slide below the ground glass, which limits the thickness of any enlarger product that would attach to the back of those cameras to kind of the thickness of a film holder. You can push it by a few millimeters, but not much. And being able to evenly diffuse light to 8x10 inches over, sorry to change units around, over like 10, 15 millimeters is not is no easy task. But with this new LED technology, that does become slightly easier. So it is definitely something we're looking into. So yes, for the 4x5 kit, and for the 5x7 and 8x10 enlarger, I'll simply say, as I've been saying for the last year, we are working on it and we would love to do it. But there's some physics, some laws of physics that we are struggling to get over, unfortunately.
Yeah. No, and that's totally understandable. Roxanna, I actually have a question for you. You know, naturally, this thing can do a lot of things that like my enlarger and your enlarger can't do. So yeah. I know we're both extremely interested. But when it comes to the work that you do with the kids at your school, so Max, if you're not familiar, well, Roxanna can tell a little bit about what she does rather than me try to summarize. But essentially, my question on top of your explanation to Max of what you already do is, do you see this being a part of, you know, of teaching a further aspect of the workflow to your kids in your program?
Well, absolutely. I would love it. And it's really just figuring out on campus the possibility of that dark space. But honestly, with the portability, and I feel like the possibility is absolutely there. Honestly, I'm just jonesing to get back into the classes. I'm like, I miss the kids. I miss the club right now. We're all starting school back again soon, but I'm missing it. And I hope that the workflow of what we do does go on to printing. I think the kids would just absolutely love it.
So, you know, knowing that there's at least one unit down here in Southern California with our good friends over at Analog Talk and Negative Supply, not to put you on the spot too much, Max, but is there any possibility that Roxanna and I can test that out, do a little hands-on review for the podcast?
Well, you definitely have put me on the spot, but yeah. No. Absolutely. That would be, yeah. As the Kickstarter's running, and even as we're doing product development, the more the merrier. If anyone who's got darkroom experience like yourselves, it'd be so useful to have your feedback. We've always like really tried as hard as we can to work with people who are actually going to be using these products. And for example, the reason I was in the darkroom today was just acting directly on some feedback from someone who'd been testing it and just implementing it. And it's just an absolutely essential part of our development process. So yeah. Any extra users or feedback is always a good thing.
Oh, right. Yeah, that sounds amazing. And you know, something, it's funny because I feel like you read my mind, Andre. I have been researching color printing. So I'm just like, you're so excited for this Kickstarter.
One thing that I really want to try, and it's a little bit of a ballsy move, I think, but with Lena Besanova doing all the testing with the new Adox Scala kit, which I don't think has, you know, officially hit the market. Bill Manning over at Studio C41 managed to pull some strings and get some chemistry sent to him. That rascal, Mr. Manning. But I'm really interested in seeing if there is a possibility of using the Harman direct positive paper as a medium to print from black and white slides, and that's an experiment that I've been wanting to do for a while, and it'd be really interesting to see if that would work. But no, thank you so much, Maxim, for being open to having us try it out and giving you our feedback as people who have some experience in darkroom printing. To pivot a little bit away from the you know, self-serving aspect of that question, I want to bring it back to you a little bit before we kind of wrap things up, in terms of, you know, you yourself, like, do you have any personal printing goals? Where do you want to get with regards to your own personal creative work? Because, you know, I know from firsthand experience that there can be times working in this industry, being surrounded by the concept of film photography 24/7, where your own personal work and skills that you want to develop get sort of pushed to the side with the minutia of, you know, running a business. I'm really glad to hear that you have had plenty of time, it seems, to get into the darkroom and do additional testing. But what would you say are your personal printing goals?
Yeah, you're completely right about, as soon as you get more involved with the analog and industry, the first thing that goes is being able to use analog equipment, because you get so busy. But this last year has been incredibly rewarding, just from, you know, I've essentially become a customer of the Enlarger, and I find myself just using it for fun as well as developing the product. Personally, I've got this massive, I've been shooting 35mm since I was, I don't know, 14, 15, and I've got this massive backlog of pictures that I processed myself but didn't necessarily get around to scanning. And I think that's similar with a lot of people. Particularly sort of in the early 2000s, scanning just wasn't as simple as it is now with all this amazing kit from companies like Negative Supply. So I'm starting to think, well, let's go back through all these negatives, you know, maybe just pick a couple from each roll. And then I just would love to have a box of photos in the cupboard that are just kind of stuff I printed, pictures that I can flick through that I love, and just have these physical items that aren't on my phone or my screen. So I guess my personal goal is to have a way of like going through all these memories that it doesn't involve clicking for Instagram or Facebook. It's quite a sort of relatively simple goal, and I know it's something that existed for the first, you know, 80-100 years of photography before smartphones became a thing, but I just want to kind of get back to that sort of that tangible object side of photography.
Well, that's really exciting to hear, and I think it's a goal that a lot of us have. I know that Roxana has to head out here in a little bit, so I want to thank you once again, Max, so much for joining us and you know, speaking to us about this product. If people want to learn a little bit more about the Enlarger, the Kickstarter, where can they find more information and follow you?
So the best place to find sort of information as it's coming out is via our Twitter or Instagram. They're both at Intrepid Camera, or we have a blog post on our website, which is intrepidcamera.co.uk. And that's got loads of information about it on there as well. We'll also be releasing, there'll also be a couple more YouTube videos coming out. We've got Lena Besanova, who you mentioned, has got a test kit, and I'm hoping she'll be able to do a video soon, as well as Matt Day and Dan Rubin and a few others who are going to be posting info about the product as the campaign's running. So yeah, just look out on our social media. We'll be reposting everything or read the blog posts on our website.
Sounds great. And yeah, we'll be following along with the project and giving it plenty of publicity as it moves forward, in addition to at some point testing it ourselves. Roxana, nice. You've got to run out really quick, so I want you to, you know, be able to give out your socials, then we'll wrap everything up.
Awesome. I am so excited to hear all about this, Max. It was really amazing. You can find me on Instagram, RoxanaLog, or my shadow account, Galanixor, or of course on TikTok, RoxanaLog. That has been a ton of fun lately.
All right. Thank you so much, Roxana. And you can find my long dormant, but hopefully soon to be resurrected, Instagram account at Andre on Film. Once again, thank you to Roxana for joining us, and for Max for, you know, dedicating a good little chunk of his evening to talking to us about this product. We wish you the best of luck with the Kickstarter campaign coming up here in a few weeks. And this episode will hopefully be out pretty soon when the good Mr. Gutterman gets around to editing it. So as always, folks, everybody stay positive and shoot some cool film photos. Take care.
All right, folks, we are back for the final segment, and a huge thanks to Andre and Roxana for doing that interview, and a gigantic thanks to Max from Intrepid Camera Company for like spending some time to talk with them. I am so glad that I had Andre and Roxana. I think our resident darkroom reporters here are in the Negative Positives media empire to do that, conduct that interview, because large format and darkroom printing is two areas of film photography that I think one day I'll get into, but not yet. I don't have the time for it. But it's on my list, so my like my retirement list or whatever, because I'm just struggling to find time to shoot photography. So I'm so glad they did the interview, because they asked way more insightful questions and got a way better conversation than I would have, because it's just not an area that I really have time for. But for those of you that do, I hope you really enjoyed that. And huge thanks, Roxana, Andre, Max from Intrepid. Thank you so much for just a really, really insightful conversation about this new product they have coming out, and a little bit behind what's going on at Intrepid. I thoroughly enjoyed it, even though it's not something I currently can really pursue. I kind of want to like just back it, because I know one day I'll need it. there you go. Thank you so much. Speaking of Roxana Angles, I have to get this out here. She has been recognized a little bit by Lomography. Lomography.com, their online magazine on Lomography.com, did an interview with Mrs. Roxana Angles. It's really, really awesome. And it really shows her some amazing photos in that interview of her work. If you haven't checked out Roxana's work, you're missing out. But so there's a really good interview that Lomography put up, and I will put the link to it in the show notes. And please go check out that interview from Lomography to Roxana Angles. Very, very well deserved. And she got a little praise for, or at least some acknowledgement for what she's doing with interviewing women photographers in the film community here on this show. And so she really made us proud, and she deserves all the recognition that she could get. Looking at her photos, every time I see her photos, I'm like, I have this thing in my house, I need to update some of the photos I have hanging in my house. It's all like my work or whatever, and I should just take my crap photos down and just dedicate an entire room to Roxana's photography, because it's better than mine, and it's probably my wife would like it better in the decor than my photos, I think. So I will have that link for Roxana's article from Lomography, from Lomography.com, in the show notes. Please check that out. Congratulations to her for getting some recognition. It's truly well deserved. And hey, congratulations to Intrepid Camera Company and Max and all the gang there for this Kickstarter and this awesome, really innovative product they're coming out with. It's really amazing to see these small companies of people, passionate people in this community that are coming out with kind of really revolutionary products, right? And you would have never seen this happen like 10 years ago. That the thought that this kind of things would be occurring 10 years ago would be you wouldn't have thought this would happen. And there's so much cool stuff going on with these kind of small, companies coming out with stuff that helps us, it makes things easier for us in this film photography hobby or passion that we have. And best of luck to the Intrepid guys and on this. And I think I'm sure it's going to go swimmingly well. And so there you go. I really enjoyed that interview. Thanks to everyone involved. Really, really awesome. Okay, let's get to a call-in, right? We gotta get a call-in camera view on this show. And this one, I actually go in order of how I receive these call-in camera reviews or call-ins of any sort. And this one, it just so happens it's John Michael Mendesa, and who I talked about in the first segment about sending me German chocolates and this custom 6-7 hand grip. It almost makes it seem like I was bribed or coerced, or I could easily be bought to get on the show. But it just so happens that John Michael is the next one up, so... You can believe me or not. You can believe I can be bought, or you can believe that this is just the order that I go in. So Mr. John Michael Mendesa, who sent me this awesome package that I talked about in segment one, is going to give us a little call in here about a camera called the Beltika. I believe that's right. Hopefully I'm pronouncing it right. So let's listen to what John Michael Mendesa has to say about the Beltika.
Hello, Mike and negative positive listeners. My name is John Michael, and this is a call-in review for the Beltika folding camera. This is a 35mm folding camera from East Germany. It was made in Dresden around 1951. For a few years before that, from around 1946 to 1950, the same camera was produced as the Balda Baldina, but because of trademark arguments at that time, they had to change their company name, and it became the VEB Belka Work in Dresden, and the Beltika was one of the first little cameras that they made. This looks like many other folding cameras. It has a lens that pops out of a swinging door. This particular model has a 50mm 2.8 Tessar lens on it, and it has shutter speeds from bulb, 1 second, and then all the way up to 250th of a second. Apertures from 2.8 to f22. Like a lot of folding cameras, you have to control your aperture and shutter speed on the lens itself. The shutter is built into the lens, so you can synchronize with your flash up to a 250th of a second if you're so inclined. There's a little PC sync port at the bottom of the lens. To open up the camera, you press a little button on the top and the lens will spring out. And then you've got the lens poking out on a little mini set of bellows. There's a knob for adjusting your distance. It goes from infinity down to 0.8 meters. And the little viewfinder and the top is really just a window that you can look through, but it does have a wheel that you can turn, which will adjust for parallax. So you can adjust the tilt of the viewfinder depending on if you're looking further away or closer up. One thing to watch out for, if you do wear glasses, that little wheel and the back of the viewfinder will scratch the hell out of your glasses. Once you've set your aperture and shutter speed, then you cock the lens on the right-hand side. There's a little lever. Pull it up. And then you can frame up and take your shot with the shutter release on the left-hand side, which also has a threaded mount for a cable release. After you've taken your shot, on the bottom of the camera, there's a little button that you push in that unlocks the film advance, and then you turn the wheel right next to it. It's on the bottom right of the camera, until it stops, and that will advance to the next frame. And the little film counter on the top will turn around to the next number. One thing to be aware of is you cannot close the camera when the shutter is cocked. So if you cock the shutter and then decide not to take a picture, you're going to have to either keep the camera open until you take a picture or blow a frame to be able to close it. You also have to set your focus to infinity before you close the camera or it won't lock properly. When you're done shooting your roll of film, then you pull down on the advancing wheel on the bottom right, which will disengage it, and then you can use the knob on the top left of the camera to rewind your film. One thing that's kind of nice is that the counter will count backwards as you're rewinding the film, so you can see when you come back to zero, and usually it's at about minus one, minus two when I load the film, so I know I've still got that little tail of film sticking out of the canister, and I can use that for developing. Or, of course, you can just roll it all the way back into your canister if you're so inclined. I got this camera for €5, and it is my Cheap Shots camera for the Sunny 16 Cheap Shots Challenge. I've done several with it, and it works pretty well. Again, you're limited to the 50mm lens, so that's what you have to work with. And if you're focusing on things closer up, then I recommend using measuring tape to get a somewhat close focus. The lens seems to be pretty accurately calibrated, so if you set it to 1 meter and you measure 1 meter, then you're pretty good. But of course, not having that visual confirmation, either with a rangefinder or with the SLR focusing system, it's a bit of a guess. So most of the pictures I take with this camera are set to infinity, either by choice because I'm doing a landscape, or by accident because I forget to actually focus it. It's a fun little camera to use, super compact and easy. Sometimes I take it out if I'm not really feeling like shooting or feeling uninspired, just using the little camera. No real pressure on it. It was cheap. I'm not really worried about it. And I take some cool pictures. So I recommend it just as kind of a fun little walk-around camera, or just as something to use if you're not too worried about quality or trying to micromanage your focus and all that sort of thing. So that's my call-in camera review for the Beltika from Dresden. Hope you all enjoyed it. Everybody stay positive and shoot some cool film photos.
Well, thank you so much, John Michael Mendiza, for your call-in camera review of the Beltika. That's a camera I've never ever heard of, and sounds fun. Sounds up my alley. So, folks, if you have anything you want to talk about in your film photography journey, whether it be camera reviews, lens reviews, film reviews, developers, anything you feel like you have some info you'd like to get out there, or even if you had a funny story about how you goofed, how you had a big goof, you can send those call-ins into our email. Record the audio any way you can. The easiest way is on your phone. There's a voice app, voice recording app, and all the smarty phones these days. And you can just send that audio file to negpositives@gmail.com, and I'll get it in the queue to get on the air. I think I only have like 4 more call-ins at this point, so we're getting a little low. So good way to get on the podcast before I ask you to be a guest on the podcast would be to do that. So, I can use some more. We could get that stockpile up a little bit. We're getting into the red zone a tad bit. So there you go. But thank you, John Michael, for that excellent review. And I think we have one more from him in the future that we'll be playing as well. So let's see, what else do we have here? What else do I need to finish up here? Okay, so I guess that brings us to wrapping up the show, which we got to get to some Ko-fi donations. And so we're going to start off with Mr. Dave Clark. Thank you, sir. No message here, but thank you so much for supporting Negative Positives. And then also Mr. Jess Lance. And he sends a little message that says, "You've been getting some awesome listener music lately. Really enjoyed that latest track. And of course, those sea chanties that get stuck in my head. All for me, grog." That's Mr. Mike Caputo. His music. So thank you so much for the coffee donations. We really appreciate it. It helps us get some of these prizes sent out that we need to send out and all that good stuff. So let's see, what else do we have here? Speaking of listener music tracks, I will have one again on this episode. As always, these solo shows, if you happen to be a musician, original musician whatsoever, and have any original music out there recorded in even the lowest forms, even in just a Radio Shack tabletop cassette recorder, and you made some music into it or whatever, we'll take those and we will play them on these solo shows. I've never not played one that I've received. So but this this week we're gonna have a track from Minson Sowers. Hopefully I'm Minson, have I talked to you about how I'm pronouncing your name? Is it Sowers or Sowers? I think it's Sowers, S-A-U-E-R-S. I'm saying Sowers because I just ate some sauerkraut tonight. My wife made some wonderful Reuben sandwiches and we had sauerkraut, and it's sort of spelled like Sowers. So Minson Sowers, I hope I'm right there. a little German heritage going on with me there. I had some, Reuben sandwiches were awesome. I'm a big fan. But anyhow, Minson Sowers, not Minson Sauerkraut, is going to give us a track called Redneck Rock. And I love the title. Minson was right around the holidays, right around Christmas, near Christmas episode. He sent us like a guitar Christmas music, holiday music medley. And people really seem to enjoy it. But now you're going to hear Minson do some redneck rock. So we're going to hear his original music track, Redneck Rock, as soon as I get out all the socials here. Before I get to the socials, I will say this thing is coming out Monday morning, March 15th. If you're listening to the show when it first comes out, this evening, March 15th, at 11 p.m. Eastern Time in the USA, Andre, myself, and Jess Jones, and possibly Roxana Engels, we're going to do a clubhouse room for Negative Positive. So you guys have heard us talk about the Clubhouse app. You have to have an iPhone, and you have to be invited if you're not already. Both Andre, myself, and Jess all have like invites that we can give. So if you want to join us this evening, when this comes out, March 15th, 2021, you can jump on that Negative Positives Clubhouse room, and we're going to just have a good chat. We're going to talk about some film photography. We're going to talk about, I don't know, probably some menthol body wash, all kinds of good stuff, some tingle in your dingle, and all the good stuff. So if you're on Clubhouse, please join us 11 p.m. tonight, and when this comes out on March 15th Eastern Time. If you're not on Clubhouse, hit us up today. Like the minute you hear this, hit one of us up, and we have some invites to give, and we can get you into that app as long as you have an iPhone. You have to have an iPhone. It's Apple iPhone only, apparently, at this point. And you can join us for a little fun discussion, a NegPos Clubhouse room. So I'm looking forward to it. It should be a lot of fun. So I want to get that out. Okay, let's get these socials out here. You can see my photography on Instagram at GuttermanPhoto, on Facebook at Mike Gutterman Photography. You can email this program at negpositives@gmail.com. You can join the Facebook group, the Negative Positives Film Photo Podcast Facebook group. We also have an Instagram account under the account name Negative Positives, mostly ran by Mrs. Roxana Engels of Lomography.com fame now. And if you submit photos to Instagram, think about using the hashtag Negative Positive so Roxana can see it and highlight it for all of us to check out. You can support this program on Ko-fi. It is ko-fi.com/negativepositives. And you can buy some merch. We have overpriced t-shirts, overpriced coffee mug, and overpriced baseball hats under the Negative Positives podcast.bigcartel.com. Okay. That's it. Now you're going to hear Minson Sowers with some redneck rock. And then, enjoy that. Folks, have a great week. We will talk to you in a week. So have a great week. Everybody stay positive. Shoot some cool film photos. We'll be right back. A Gutter Man Cave production!